So what do you say we start the show with a question? Here's the question. Where is the list that was promised of the rich and powerful men who were Jeffrey Epstein's clients and associates? Somebody hiding that list? Why? Was Mr. Epstein working for another government, perhaps Israel, you think? And why aren't we allowed to know this? Why aren't we even allowed to ask this question? And then there's this, a newly released recording. Have you seen this or heard it? It's Jeffrey Epstein talking before he died to a reporter where he calls Donald Trump his closest friend for 10 years.
So how do you know this?
I was Donald's friend for close to 10 years. Closest friend, he said. Did you hear that? I was Donald's closest friend for 10 years. Relevant? You decide as we give this story the Sanchez effect. Let's do it. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're going to begin with the story that is frustrating reporters as well as just average citizens and just about anybody who's sick and tired of the gaslighting, sick and tired of the lies that have been spewing from the mouths of government officials in the good old United States of America for decades now. The overwhelming feeling in America today is it continues. First, there's this new video, right? This is the video you may have seen already of Jeffrey Epstein. It came out a couple days ago, being walked into his cell. But guess what? A part of it is missing, probably erased, they say. Why? Who knows? There's also photos of his cell door, but it appears it's the wrong door. The original video of what would have captured Epstein's supposed suicide has gone missing as well. And the guards who were supposed to be there that night guarding him mysteriously were changed out at the last minute. There's just so many questions about this man who recruited young girls to have sex with, who has possible ties to the Israeli Mossad, and who lured the wealthiest and most powerful men in the world to share his trappings. The list is long, by the way. These guys, they're from all over the place. Presidents, prime ministers, celebrities, billionaires, among them. Who knew? According to Epstein himself, in this newly released recording that I shared with you before, here it is again, Donald Trump.
So how do you know this?
That is part of author Michael Wolff's very long interview with Jeffrey Epstein that was just released, where he details his close 10-year relationship with Mr. Trump. He goes on and on to give specifics about what he's like, what he doesn't like, what he does, what he doesn't do. The recording is one of many reasons that reporters and American people are now asking, what happened? What happened to the promise of making the Epstein files public so everybody can see what really happened? In fact, here's a reporter asking that very thing yesterday at a news conference. Now, watch the reaction.
The former Labor Secretary, who was Miami U.S. Attorney Alex Acosta, he allegedly said that he did work for an intelligence agency. So could you resolve whether or not he did? And also, could you say why there was a minute missing from the jailhouse tape?
Yeah, sure.
If hey, Pam, could I just interrupt for
sure.
One second? Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years. You're asking, we have Texas, we have this, we have all of the things. Yeah. And are people still talking about this guy, this creep? That is unbelievable. Do you want to waste the time and do you feel like answering?
I don't mind answering.
I mean, I can't believe you're asking a question on Epstein at a time like this where we're having some of the greatest success and also tragedy with what happened in Texas. It just seems like a desecration, but you go ahead.
Yes, Mr. President, the whole country is asking questions about what happened to Jeffrey Epstein. By the way, Attorney General Pam Bondi, she does go ahead, as the president says, go ahead. But before she goes ahead and before we play her response, it's important to point out why the Epstein mystery does still matter. It's because it was in many ways the very reason Mr. Trump got elected. He and his supporters went around the country convincing Americans that everything would change if Mr. Trump were elected. There would be way more transparency. There would be no more lies. There would be no more protections for the rich and the powerful. Oh, my God. Sounds like I just explained the Epstein case. And the Epstein case, by the way, was going to be the example of that truth, of that transparency. In fact, here are Trump and his officials promising just before they became Trump officials of what they were going to do.
It's just very strange for a lot of people that the list of clients that went to the island has not been made public.
Yeah. It's very interesting, isn't it? Probably will be, by the way. Probably.
So if you're able to, you'll be...
Yeah, I'd certainly take a look at it. Yeah, I'd be inclined to do the Epstein. I'd have no problem with it.
Release the list.
Seriously, we need to release the Epstein list. That is an important thing.
Child sex trafficking has no place in the United States of America, and I will do everything, if confirmed as FBI director, to make sure the American public knows the full weight of what happened in the past and how we are going to countermand missing children and exploited children going forward.
So there you go, the president, the vice president, the director of the FBI. And I could go on and on and on. They all went around saying, elect us, and we'll make sure the Epstein stuff is released. Nope, not anymore. Let's listen now to the attorney general herself about the Epstein client list as she was asked by that reporter. I told you I'd show it to you and let you hear it for yourself. Here it is. It's about the list of men who may have slept with little girls. When she was asked about this, originally, this is the question she was asked on Fox News. I want you to hear that first. Here it is.
The DOJ may be releasing the list of Jeffrey Epstein's clients? Will that really happen?
It's sitting on my desk right now to review. That's been a directive by President Trump.
Sitting on my desk right now to review. Sitting on my desk to review. Sitting on my desk. Did you hear that? So what does Pam Bondi say now when she's asked that question? And she's asked about the information regarding Epstein's connections to Israel. She's also asked about the files detailing how he died. And she's also asked about this clients list that she said was, after all, sitting on her desk.
First, to back up on that, in February, I did an interview on Fox, and it's been getting a lot of attention because I said... I was asked a question about the client list, and my response was, it's sitting on my desk to be reviewed, meaning the file along with the JFK, MLK files as well. That's what I meant by that. Also, to the tens of thousands of video, they turned out to be child porn downloaded by that disgusting Jeffrey Epstein. Child porn is what they were. Never going to be released, never going to see the light of day. To him being an agent, I have no knowledge about that. We can get back to you on that. And the minute missing from the video, we released the video showing definitively the video was not conclusive, but the evidence prior to it was showing he committed suicide. And what was on that, there was a minute that was off the counter. And what we learned from Bureau of Prisons was every year, every night, they redo that video. It's old, from like 1999. So every night the video is reset, and every night should have the same minute missing. So we're looking for that video to release that as well, showing that a minute is missing every night. And that's it on Epstein.
Yeah, there you go. If that sounds to you like gaslighting, it should. Americans from both sides of the aisle are saying the same exact thing. What the hell? By the way, I don't think I could underscore enough. I know I mentioned it before, but let me underscore again just how much a part of the Trump and MAGA movement the Epstein case really was. I mean, it was like the piece de resistance, you know, like the Frenchies would say, of the MAGA movement. The shining example of how Americans would stop being lied to. The people would get their government back, and they'd stop being treated like children, or worse, like idiots. So why is the truth about Epstein so important to America, to the culture of America, right now especially? Here's my friend Tucker Carlson.
How can you say that thousands of children were raped, but I'm not going to find out who raped them?
Yeah.
How can you say that?
I agree completely.
They said that. By the way, when Pam Bondi went on television and said, I have a videotape of kids getting abused, I followed this case closely, and I know a lot of the people involved, as I've told you.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. I didn't know that. Really? Thousands of children got raped?
Yeah.
Who raped them? Where are the rapists? Like, why aren't they in jail? What? This
For
is the
life.
Department of Justice.
Yes, yes.
That is so crazy. This is like the, this is honestly one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my entire life. And I just think it's very dangerous to play around with this stuff. Like, very dangerous.
Well, it's,
I don't want a revolution, but if you wanted a revolution, this is how you would act.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that makes Americans angry, and they are angry about this, you know, and they should be. RT correspondent Don Corder has been following this story for us, and he's good enough to join us now as he comes into the set to explain to us where we are with this particular story.
Hey, Rick.
How are you, buddy?
Thanks for having me on the program.
So good to see you. I think Tucker's right, you know? It's not about Jeffrey Epstein, and it's not about men who may have cheated on their wives or had sex with whatever, you know, other women. It's about little girls.
Yeah.
These women were 15, 16, 17 years old. And I don't know how many of them there are. I don't know who they are, but we know they exist.
Yeah.
How can we not? How can the Justice Department of the United States not be putting full-throated attention on this? That's really the questions, right?
Well, I mean, I'm just as shocked as Tucker Carlson is here when he says that it's absolutely unbelievable that thousands of children were raped and basically nobody's been held accountable. I mean, and then, like you said earlier in the program, right? I mean, America's a revolutionary country. It was based on revolutionary foundations. The MAGA crowd that brought Trump to power was about kind of questioning authority, right? Questioning the
institution. They were going to tell us who killed JFK,
right?
And they were going to tell us that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
Right, and now we get months of J.D. Vance going on talk shows saying, oh, yeah, we got to release the Epstein list. We got Trump saying that he's going to release it. Then at the last minute, of course, after Pam Bondi also said that the list is going to be revealed, there's no list, nothing to see here, right? And then everybody's just supposed to believe that. I mean, so even if you play devil's advocate, say there's not a list, what about all of the CCTV footage that exists that was in Epstein's mansion? That's not declassified.
And by the way, it's a figurative list. In other words, it's not really a list like, you know, John, Mary, Pedro, Fred, you know, Vladimir. No.
Right.
In other words, it's the conceptualization that this guy was treating many men to his little private island and his private plane called the Lolita Express.
Right.
We know these men went there. We know these men were in this place with naked young women.
Yeah. Where are the travel logs?
You and I could do this investigation if we were just giving access to some of these files, probably.
Right, right. And if you look at the parties involved, right? I mean, Prince Andrew was on that island.
Yeah.
He was accused of rape by a specific woman who was on that island. She took a plea deal. There was, you know, they didn't go to court over that. And with these guards also, when Jeffrey Epstein allegedly committed suicide, they took a plea deal. I mean, they were charged with falsifying records, not doing their job, and that just kind of, you know, went out the window.
If it was Don Corder or Rick Sanchez, we would be in prison.
Of course.
You especially, because of that beard.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
No, here's what I think we probably need to ask, and let's do this. Let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
So, all these people who I think were earnest, you know, when they went around the country doing interviews on Fox News and here and there, and they were all being asked about the Epstein case, and they all said, when I get into my position in the Trump White House, I am going to uncover this. I am going to work on this. But then they got there, and one of the names on the list was their bosses.
Right.
Suddenly, they're not too eager to do the investigation. I mean, I'm not accusing Mr. Trump of anything because I don't know, and I'm not accusing Mr. Clinton, and I'm not accusing the Prince of England or whatever. But boy, it certainly doesn't smell good, right?
Right. I mean, that's the problem. We don't really know anything. But
yeah.
That's what we need to do. We need to know things. But it seems that at every step, where it's kind of an investigation is being obstructed, right? Epstein apparently tried to kill himself twice in prison. The first time that not that many people talk about, the footage was just erased.
Yeah.
And there was no accountability for that. Then you got this 1 minute gap on the second when he actually ended up killing himself. Pam Bondi ended up talking about how that's just like a regular gap that they have every day. They're going to release other footage from that prison to prove that it's something normal. But even if that's the case, maybe someone knows that there's a minute where the video isn't going to be playing.
It's a clown show.
It is.
It's a clown show. I mean, you know, Keystone Cops could do a better investigation than this. Like, we know nothing. We know nothing. No, we have no idea. No. Where's the tape? Oh, it's missing. Where's that 10 seconds? Oh, it's missing. You shut the wrong door. Oh, yeah, we meant to move the other door. Oh, yeah, what happened to the guard? Well, he had to go out and his cousin took over for him.
Right.
And it's crazy.
Same with the coroners, because the only independent coroner to look at Jeffrey Epstein's body says that there are indications of homicide. What's that?
Yeah.
What's that?
And Cyril Wett, one of the greatest coroners in the history of American criminology. Speaking of clown shows, look what Elon Musk, our friend Elon Musk, put out. This is a tweet that he just released. Let me show it to you. Here's what he says. He says, we will release the Epstein list. We just need more time. The Epstein list is on my desk. And then finally, full clown with the big rubber nose, red nose. There is no Epstein list. Right. Now, you know what he's doing. And we've got some video as well in the interview. That it's a long interview. I haven't been able to listen to all of it because I don't have the time. Mm-hmm. But he's doing an interview with the famous reporter, Michael Wolff.
Right.
And he goes on in detail to explain that Epstein had a very long relationship. They were very close friends.
Yeah.
We've got some video, as a matter of fact, of that era. You may have seen this video. This is not new video, but this is Mr. Epstein and Mr. Trump partying down in Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. So one does get the sense, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it yet, that they were close.
Yeah.
They were very close.
Yeah.
Even though Mr. Trump denies that. He says, I may have had one meeting with him.
Right. Well, I mean, after what happened with Jeffrey Epstein, any smart person would have
said something like that. Yeah, I would say the same thing. Right.
But, I've seen these videos before, also seen pictures of him and Jeffrey Epstein, them with their wives together, hanging out. I mean, the connection is undeniable, really, when you look at what's around on the internet. We live in the age of information. If something goes in the internet, it's there forever.
I am from Miami, so I know a lot of people at the Miami Herald. The Miami Herald broke this story.
Yeah.
Great newspaper, by the way, the newspaper that I grew up with. Yay, Miami Herald. Yay, Miami Dolphins. I spoke to the reporters who broke this story. Mm-hmm. Judy, whose last name escapes me now. But she told me that she had long conversations at the time with the families, and they were disheartened by the fact that the prosecutor, the federal prosecutor on this case, said that he didn't convict Epstein at the time, which would have stopped some of the raping from happening, because he was told that he was part of an intel organization based in another country. Mm-hmm. And all the reporting that I've seen from people who I trust has pointed the direction at the Mossad. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the same kind of reporting? What are your thoughts?
I haven't, but actually, I mean, it would make sense as to why, if that's actually the case, why every federal organization that's somehow dealt with this case, the FBI, the prosecutor, the attorney general, have all kind of not put anything concrete forward.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make a lot of sense, right?
You know, really kind of pissed me off that he was charged with having sex with a prostitute. Mm-hmm. The girl he slept with was like 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. How could she be a prostitute?
Right.
That's rape.
Right.
She's not an adult.
Of a child.
So how can you call her a prostitute? I remember she told me, the reporters who worked on this, and I tried to get her to come on RT, but she wouldn't come. But she kept telling me, she goes, these parents are so angry that their daughter's being called a prostitute.
Yeah.
And the man who raped their daughter is getting a misdemeanor.
Right. And the others who are at the island, who knows who they are, get off scot-free.
Exactly. Which is where we are right now.
I know.
Do you think in following this story that, two questions here, really, because you know the pulse of the United States like I do. People are angry about this, and they're angry that Mr. Trump isn't doing the right thing with Gaza. Mm-hmm. They're angry that Mr. Trump isn't doing the right thing with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They're angry that Mr. Trump isn't doing the right thing with the JFK files. They're angry that Mr. Trump isn't doing the right thing with the Epstein files, you know? And they truly believed in this guy.
Yeah.
Do you think these kinds of things are going to have a deleterious effect on his presidency? Or
I think absolutely. I mean, I watched actually that podcast that Tucker Carlson did, a small part of it you just showed earlier in the program, and he said that, you know, if you want to create a revolutionary situation in the country, that's a good way to do it. Cover up something like that when people are already upset about a lot of things in the country. And for all these reasons, they elected Trump in the first place. It's kind of just like an FU to his entire voter base. They wanted to change. They wanted to roll back the deep state. They didn't want more war.
But they're not doing it.
Yeah. Trump created another war instead of solving the one that he said he was going to solve in one day.
Right. You know? So we'll attack Iran instead.
Yeah.
No, that really is a difficult situation. And I'm not sure what the... I'm not sure what the effect will be of this, but I don't think it will bode well for Trump and his presidency, given the fact that he really did hold out so much promise.
He did.
And I still think his instincts are generally good, but I think it's almost like the last person to talk to him is the one who wins. And also, I hate to say this because it sounds bad, but also the one with the biggest bag of money.
Yeah. I mean, we can't say for sure what goes on behind closed doors. You know, some people say, you know, the big MAGA supporters are like, oh, he's got to make compromises. Others, like I think, to be honest, that he had bad intentions to begin with. But at any rate, I think he can really, like, kiss the hope of having a third term goodbye, honestly, after all of this.
That might be another controversy you and I will be talking about in the future. Don, what a pleasure. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks for coming on.
It's a fascinating story, and I know everybody in the United States is talking about it, and Elon all of a sudden is feeding it as well, which makes it so interesting. So here's what we're going to do. After a short break, I'm going to speak with Mushahid Hussain Sayyad, former Pakistani senator and information minister and current co-chairman of the International Conference of Asian Political Parties. Pakistan is hot in so many ways, including economically, by the way, because of their ties to China. And we're going to talk about that. Don't go away. One of the big stories that we've been following here over the past month is the conflict between India and Pakistan. And we've given you lots of different perspectives on what happened here, and thank God the situation has at least resolved itself temporarily. It looks like people are talking, which is always good. Joining us now to talk more about this is Mushahid Hussain Sayyad. He's a former Minister of Information and Broadcasting of Pakistan and a former member of the Senate of Pakistan, now also co-chairman, International Conference of Asian Political Parties. Mr. Senator, thank you, sir, for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Mr. Sanchez, and good to see you in Moscow. I was following you in CNN, but you always spoke truth to power, and you had to pay a price. But glad to see you on screen again.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think it is important. I think truth is, like, you know, our middle name around here with what we try to do here on the Sanchez Effect. So, hey, let's start talking about the conflict. Where are we now? I mean, that was scary to see your country and India, two countries that have the ability to use nuclear weapons, going at each other. Thank God cooler heads prevailed and things were resolved. Where are we now?
Well, we didn't start it. Our friends, bigger country, India, they launched an aggression against us. India is 10 times larger than Pakistan. They miscalculated badly, just as the Israelis miscalculated badly when they attacked Iran. And we gave the Indians a bloody nose because we know that size does not equal strength. And we know how to defend our country because we have the capacity, the will, and the means to do so. And we are very appreciative of the role of President Trump as the peacemaker because when we gave the Indians the bloody nose and we shot six of their planes and the Indians were taken by surprise, they went running to the White House, and the White House told us that they want to sue for peace. We said, we are ready. We are a peace-loving country. We are the victims of aggression, and we are ready for peace, but peace with dignity, and that's what happened.
You know, when I talk to Indian officials, they tell a different story. They say that Pakistan started it, and they say that Pakistan either should have had better control of this terrorist organization that attacked their civilians, or they possibly even knew they were going to do it. Which was it? I imagine you're going to argue that those are not people that the Pakistani government could control, correct?
We condemn the terrorist attack, which took place inside Indian-occupied territory, 200 kilometers from the border with Pakistan. And India did not present one shred of evidence, an iota of evidence, that Pakistan was involved. They didn't have the smoking gun. They had no linkages. That's why their narrative was never bought by the international community, by the Americans or the West or the United Nations. And so it's like, you know, the U.S. blaming Saudi Arabia and bombing Saudi Arabia after 9/11 because some Saudi terrorists were involved in 9/11. That's not how you do about it. India acted like the bully on the block. They wanted to take out their ire and their failing internally on Pakistan, seeing it as a small country. And we hit back. We said, no way. We won't allow that. And they are a nuclear country. We are a nuclear country. And size does not equal strength, Mr. Sanchez, as you know very well, in this part of the world. Otherwise, the Afghans should have lost to the Soviets, and the Vietnamese should have lost to the Americans, if that was the case.
Is that conflict in that region, in that disputed land, as it's often called, what's the likelihood that the dispute will be resolved or at least figured out?
Well, we are grateful to President Trump that he brought it out center stage, that the root cause of conflict between Pakistan and India is the unresolved Kashmir dispute, where people are denied their right of self-determination, which the United Nations resolutions envisage, just as the Palestinians are denied their right of self-determination, which the Israelis deny. So when there's repression, there's bound to be resistance, indigenous, widespread, popular, and spontaneous, both in the case of Kashmir and Palestine. And we have nothing to do with it. We didn't start the uprising in Kashmir. We can't stop it. The people are rejecting Indian occupation. It's as simple as that. And they want freedom, just as the Palestinians reject the Israeli occupation.
Are you worried a little bit? I remember, well, you mentioned that you used to watch when I used to do the news on NBC and on CNN, and I was constantly filing stories on the Musharraf government and all that was going on between the United States. And I remember at the time, the conversation in the United States was that we were just going to throw so much money at Pakistan that Pakistan was going to do whatever the hell we wanted to do as Americans. And it got to the point where I think the situation in Pakistan got a little bit corrupt because of that. Because whenever you throw too much money at anything, that kind of thing is going to happen. Do you agree with my assessment, and has that been fixed?
Not quite, because they didn't throw that money. They owed us the money. We fought the war against terrorism. We are the biggest victims of terrorism in the region. 80,000 Pakistani children, women, and men have been martyred because of terrorism coming from Afghanistan, which is a blowback from the old war between the U.S. and the Soviet Union in the Cold War days. So, and there are a lot of jobless jihadis, and the U.S. left the region high and dry, and we were left holding the baby with the bathwater. Huh. So actually, after 9/11, we helped the United States curb terrorism in this part of the world. So it's no favor they did to us. And it wasn't that much money, by the way. They've given Israel, they've given Ukraine much, much more for doing this.
We're going by older standards, I guess. Everything seems to have grown since. But you know what? It's interesting having this conversation with you because, and this is one of the reasons that I tell people that I'm here, my friends in the United States. You give me a different perspective. The perspective that I gave you is very much the inside Washington perspective because I'm an American correspondent. I'm a reporter. What was I getting fed? That information. Now I speak to you, sir, and you say, well, let me turn it around for you, Mr. Sanchez. In actuality, yes, they supported us, but we supported them more. As a matter of fact, that's your point.
And that's why I like Trump, because Trump does not represent the traditional Washington Beltway worldview or the worldview of the military-industrial complex or of the U.S. deep state. He is an outsider, and he has a perspective which is different. And that's why he intervened and acted as an honest broker on not just Pakistan and India, but also in Iran and Israel. So I think that that's refreshing. Otherwise, the old folks like Biden or Obama or Bush wouldn't have acted that way because they are hostage to their own generals and to their own military-industrial complex. which thinks differently.
Let me use a word my kids would use if they were talking to you. your country is going through a bromance of sort right now with China. What is that all about?
Well, we have a very old relationship with China. It's last 40, 50 years. It's a very strong relationship. China is a neighbor. China is a best friend. We supported China when they were isolated. And we were the bridge between Washington and Beijing, as you would recall, Mr. Sanchez,
yeah,
in 1971. And we brought the two countries together in this historic rapprochement of 71. So we are the good guys, and we still feel that the U.S. and China should do business with each other as two big powers. And we stand by China because China is a rising power of Asia, and China is certainly not an aggressive power. And similarly, we feel in the Ukraine also, the war was unleashed by Biden and the NATO people against Russia, and they trapped Russia into that, and they went back on their promises, which James Baker had made to Gorbachev on German unification, that NATO will not expand one inch eastwards.
Yeah.
So this militarization of foreign policy by the U.S. has led to these conflicts. And I think that we should have good relations with China, with Russia, and the region, and the U.S. has a role to play in that. I think Trump can do it. And that's why I feel that he can be the potential peacemaker for the region.
You know, it's interesting the way you spelled out or explained your long friendship with China, because, you know, it's one thing to be a friend with China in the 1980s or the 1990s. It's a heck of another thing to be a friend with China right now. The power of the yen, the Chinese economy, is, you know, spellbinding, if nothing else, very impressive. So it puts your country kind of in the catbird seat, being along for the ride so early and being good friends now with somebody who's so wealthy, should I say.
Yes, I personally visited China, Mr. Sanchez, when I was a student 50 years ago. I was a teenager, and I saw China poor, weak, and isolated. And now China is strong, rich, and a leader of the global South. So I've seen the transformation under, I call it the three R's, the revolution under Chairman Mao, the reform under Deng Xiaoping, and the rise, the peaceful rise under Xi Jinping. So it's a remarkable transformation. But China, remember, is a peace-loving country. They have had no intentions of aggression or invasion, occupation or war against any third country. Their track record is very clear. And unlike the Indians, they are not acting as bullies. They're acting as friends and partners. And that's a big difference. And that's why China is so popular in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And they have a good outreach. And I feel that the U.S. should also coexist with them peacefully.
Let me ask you one more question on China, because it just came to me as you were saying how incredibly peaceful they are. They may be a peaceful, and you're right. They're not outwardly aggressive, at least anything that I have seen, although some people would argue in the South China Sea, et cetera, et cetera. But that gets into a whole another conversation. What I will say is more and more they're producing armaments, and your country is a buyer. Explain that to me.
Well, the Chinese are, frankly, very good capitalists, Mr. Sanchez. They have equipment, and if the U.S. is willing to sell to us, we'll buy American equipment. But the Americans and the Westerners are only selling equipment to India or Israel. They're not selling to Pakistan. And China is the sole supplier, and so China is willing to sell, and we are willing to buy, because we need the weapons for our defense, for our security, not for any other offensive purposes. And I think that Chinese technology has outclassed Western technology during the recent conflict with India, when we shot down three Rafales and Mirage planes, and it showed that Chinese technology is so high quality and superior to Western technology, even in the military domain. So I think that's something, as an Asian, I'm proud of that fact. So, and China is doing, and if anybody else wants to buy Chinese planes and Chinese equipment, oh, why not? They'll sell it.
I'll tell
no
you what.
No problem at all.
You are so good at your job. You make your case so well, and you can explain things in ways that
I'm
make
a former
people...
journalist.
Yeah,
yeah. Former
well,
journalist.
I can we might want to give you a show here, okay? So we'll probably be sending a contract over.
Thank you so much. With pleasure.
You're so good at
Russia with love anytime.
Hey, listen. Let me ask you about some of the things going on in the world, and we'll move away in terms of just Pakistani relations with other countries. I was following you on Twitter, and you made some comments about what's going on specifically with Iran. Looked to me like you were almost a little hot under the collar with what you saw going on in Iran. Explain your position, if you would.
Iran, like China, is our neighbor. Iran, like Pakistan, was a victim of aggression. And I think that Mr. Trump was trapped by the Israeli lobby and Netanyahu and his gang. Mm-hmm. And they pushed Trump to join in this war of aggression, because Trump is essentially, at its core, not a warmonger. And they thought that it'll be a cakewalk like Iraq or Syria, and they'll do it in a jiffy. They'll attack and the regime will collapse, and they figured out that guy who was in Paris, the son of the old king, Shah, was waiting in the wings. And the Iranians showed resilience. And that was my view, that the Iranian regime will not collapse. They'll fight back. Of course, they suffered a big setback the first 48 hours because of Mossad penetration of the system. And now Trump realized that essentially Netanyahu was sucking him in into a long drawn war, maybe involving boots on the ground, which Trump would never want, because that will be the end of MAGA and the end of his presidency. So he backed off. And I think today the good news is we are probably heading towards the mother of all deals in the Middle East between Tehran and Washington, which would be truly historic. And President Trump, I think, can clinch it. And the Iranians, I can tell you, by the way, I'm having dinner with the Iranian ambassador tonight. They are ready for this deal. So, and it's going to be Iranian cuisine, which is very delicious, for your information.
Do you think the Iranians actually licked the Israelis, and that's the real reason why Mr. Trump called off the 12-day war or whatever it was called?
Absolutely correct. Spot on, Mr. Sanchez. The Israelis got the beating of their lifetime. It's not Hamas or Hezbollah or those poor Palestinians in Gaza. The Israelis really got a bloody nose. 15,000 people homeless, 2,000 houses destroyed, five military bases attacked, Mossad headquarters attacked, a Weizmann Institute attacked. 12 days, they were not living in their bedrooms, they were living in the bunkers. And Netanyahu didn't know what the hell hit him. So I mean, it was Israeli was being bashed up right and left, and they couldn't sustain it that long. So basically, Trump came to their rescue, and he gave them a bailout. And yeah. I think Netanyahu owes Trump big time for saving his ass. Sorry, pardon my French.
That's okay. We're on cable. Finally, we talked about China. We talked about the United States. Obviously, we talked about the situation with India. I'm curious to see what your perspective is on Russia and the situation it finds itself in with Mr. Zelensky. What is your take on that, Mr. Senator?
I was recently in, I visited the Soviet Union as a journalist, and then I've also interviewed many of the leaders. I was recently in Russia for a conference where I had a 40-minute meeting with Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, and it was in a conference in Perm in Russia in the Urals. Mm-hmm. I feel that Russia is a great country, it's a good friend of Pakistan, it's a peace-loving country, and there's no way, there's no business of NATO expansion. In fact, NATO has no right to exist in today's world. I mean, what is the raison d'etre of NATO? It's a relic of the Cold War. Now they want a new enemy in Russia. Russia has not launched any aggression against anybody. Mr. Putin is doing a great job. Mr. Putin has a lot of fans in Pakistan because he's a strong leader. Otherwise, if he had not been there, Russia, they wanted to even destabilize and divide Russia. So I think Russia is an important partner in what we call Eurasia. And I think Mr. Trump is on track that Zelensky, I mean, he was just being put up by the Biden crowd and the Europeans and these NATO folks. They wanted to fight to the last Ukrainian to bleed the Russians. And I think the shoe is on the other foot. Russia has won the Ukraine war. And the earlier the war ends, it's better for all concerned. And there should be no room for any new Cold War, whether in Russia. To see Russia as an enemy is absolutely obsolete, unacceptable, just as when they see China as an enemy is also absolutely unacceptable. So I think Russia and China, and there'll not be any reverse Kissinger. Let me tell you that. The Russian-Chinese alliance is rock solid. And I think it's good for the global South. And I think the big three, China, United States, and Russia can work together to build a better tomorrow based on peace. And I think that's what we should be. We should not have warmongers from Washington or London or Brussels telling us how to fight the Russians or the Chinese. And that's not what we need in the 21st century.
Mr. Syed, it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir. You are glib. You enjoy a good argument. You like taking it and giving it. And
I'm your fan. Mr. Sanchez, I'm your fan. You're a tough guy.
You and my children and my wife. That's it. I got five people now. Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Good luck.
You're so kind, sir. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. My pleasure.
And that is Senator Syed giving us the good word in Pakistan. And that is our news. I want to thank you so much for being with us. And remember to follow us on my podcast, Journalists to Be Speaking. Or you can chat with me on X, Rick Sanchez TV, Twitter, whatever they call it these days. You know, we do try to tell the truth here. We try to do it clean and honest and raw and real and without corporate spin. So stay with us, and I'll look for you the next time.